Rashi's job is to take whatever it is in the simple understanding of the pasuk that is not so simple and to explain it. So if there's a question and Rashi does not address that question, we immediately have to wonder why, especially if it's an obvious looking question. And that's what's going to happen in our parasha. It is a very major question. Why does the Torah repeat the entire story of the instructions and the fulfillment of those instructions of how to build a Mishkan? Surely it could have just done a simpler job and said, the Jews did exactly as they were told. And in our analysis of trying to understand how it's so simple, because Rashi has already taught us the principle of why the Torah would ever repeat something, that in itself is going to raise a question, because the principle Rashi taught us seemed to indicate that if it is the servants of great people like Eliezer, the servant of Avram, speaking, that will take precedence over information, that is, Torah information, instructions on how to live. This is not a story. But what we will determine from this is that there actually are two channels of Judaism. There's the part of Judaism that is told as an instruction, and the part that is told more as a story. The one indicates bare bones of what you're supposed to do, and the other, the enthusiasm with which you do it, which teaches us a great lesson about how to serve Hashem. Kvar nisbor peyomim rabbis, we've explained numerous times, Rashi bepirush al haTorah oimed al kol inyan shechaser bo bir bepshuto shel mikra umeforshei. That Rashi will address anything that in the simple understanding of the pasuk does not seem to make sense, and he'll explain it. If for whatever reason Rashi does not have an explanation, then he admits it and he says, I don't know what the explanation is. So therefore, for that reason, if something appears to us to be really difficult to understand in the simple reading of the psukim, and Rashi does not address it, then there's one of two options of what's happening. Either there really is no question and we're just imagining it because the simple understanding of the pasuk is sufficient, or Rashi's already addressed this issue either overtly or by implication of something else that he's explained previously. So, let's look at our parasha now. In parashas Pekudei, there's something that, when you read it at first, really doesn't seem to make sense. And Rashi doesn't comment on it at all in the entire parasha, which is very strange. So what's the issue? In parashas Vayakel, because of Mesiras Tzivei Hashem Atumas HaMishkan Al Dei Moshe Rabbeinu L'chol Bnei Yisrael Kol HaPratim Shebedavar. In parashas Vayakel, we get told all of the details of the instructions that Hashem gave to Moshe of how to build the Mishkan, what materials are used, how much of each material, how it's put together, etc. All the details are there. He says, firstly, there's an instruction of which materials to bring, and then how you build the Mishkan with all of the relevant details. And then after we told everything that Hashem tells Moshe to instruct the Jewish people, then we're told that they did it. And then after we're told that everybody brought what they were supposed to bring, then we're told in tremendous detail how the artisans actually built the Mishkan. And that goes through the whole of Vayakel and then into our parasha Pekudei, where we get all the details of the garments, the uniforms of the Kohanim. So it's very strange, because everything is told in instructive form, and then everything is told again in application form, like all of the same details. Exactly what you said they should bring, it tells us they brought. Exactly what they were told to create, to form, they form. Whatever they were told to fashion for the Kohanim, they fashion. So, you know, why do you have to say everything twice? V'lecha'ira. Why doesn't the Torah just simply say that Moshe conveyed all of the information about how to build the Mishkan and how to make the Big Day Kahuna? All of the details of which have already been discussed in three parashas of the Torah. And then after it would have said that Moshe did or conveyed exactly what they were supposed to do, then the Torah could have very simply said, And the Jews did exactly what Moshe instructed them. Or in fact, it could have been even more succinct. And instead of saying, Moshe told them all of the details, and then they fulfilled all of the details, why don't you just simply say, why don't we just have Moshe getting told by Hashem all of the things that they have to do, and then a one-liner afterwards to say, and the Jews did it, exactly as Moshe told them. That would be so much simpler. This is actually a methodology, it's a language usage that's common in the Torah, including in our parasha, with certain issues. So, why do we have to have all the details repeated? All of the details of what Hashem told Moshe. All of the details of what Moshe told the Jews. All of the details of what the Jews did. We get it. We understand it. And by the way, anybody who's the Baal Koire and leans this parasha, you'll know it gets confusing because you've already said all of these words before, except now they're a little nuanced. The tense is a bit different. The tune is a bit different. Why do we have to get into all of that? Just say, as they were told, so they did. Especially when you look at what Rashi says at the beginning of Parashas Vayakel, when we're getting into this whole conversation, Rashi says, I don't have to explain this again. I've already explained all of it when the instructions were given originally in Truma Tetzaveh and Parashas Kisiso. If Rashi says, I don't have to comment, then Rashi's basically telling you there's nothing new here. There's no new information. It's verbatim repetition. Because look, Rashi's got nothing further to say. So if Rashi didn't feel the need to have to give any further explanation, why did the Torah feel the need to repeat and repeat again identical information? This is a very straightforward and obvious question in the Pshat, and it is addressed by other Meforshim, that other commentators on the Torah address this issue because it's glaring. Rashi doesn't breathe a word. Doesn't say anything at the beginning of Parashas Vayakel, and he doesn't address it even at the end of Parashas Pekudah, where you say, you may be wondering at this point why we've repeated everything. Nothing, not a word. Especially when you consider that earlier on in Parashas Kisiso, Rashi made a point of identifying why the Torah repeated a few words, not full sentences and full paragraphs, just a few words, and Rashi said, you want to know why? When the Torah repeats the instruction, do not cook a kid in its mother's milk, so there he explains that one is to tell you may not eat meat and milk together, and one is to tell you that you may not cook meat and milk together, and one is to tell you that you may not benefit from milk and meat together. So that's just, what? Five words, and that's it. Rashi says, wow, that's unusual. Why is the Torah repeating itself? Must be to teach us something. And yet here, where it's paragraphs that are repeated to form one of the longest parasha combinations you can ever get when Vayakel and Pekudah are together, and Rashi doesn't seem in any way perturbed by it. So maybe he has a suggestion. Maybe Rashi does address at least part of this question in our parasha, because al pasuk of Etzalo ben Uri Gomer asas kol hashet tziva Hashem es Moshe, when it tells us who the actual architect of the Mishkan was, that it was Betzalel, then he did everything that Moshe instructed him to do. So Rashi points out, Pirush Rashi, Moshe tziva leBetzalel lases tchila keinem v'chakach Mishkan, that Moshe's instruction to Betzalel was, first he told him about all the different keinem, the utensils that would be inside the Mishkan, and then he told him about the Mishkan. So what does Betzalel say to him? Betzalel is the architect, right? He understands the pragmatic element of how you do these things. Betzalel says, you know, the normal way you do something is you first build the structure and then you make the furniture that goes inside the structure. Otherwise, where are you going to house all these, where you're going to put the Aron and the Shulchan, everything, until you have a Mishkan? So logically, you should make the Mishkan first. And then Moshe says, Taka, you're right, that's in fact how it was instructed. The Mishkan should come first, and that's what they did in practice. So maybe that's part of the answer. Maybe based on this, we can give a little bit of an answer. Now we know why the Torah had to repeat all of the details of the Mishkan and its vessels. That it will illustrate us that Bezalel switched around the order from how the information was told to him into how it would be executed in practice. And maybe that's why, you know, the Torah had to repeat itself. Okay, it's kind of an answer. It's certainly not going to satisfy everything, as we'll see. There's one detail that we have to think about, and then two major questions. Besides the fact that that wouldn't still explain why we need every single detail. If all you're showing us is the order of events, the Torah could have really summarized that and said, they made the Mishkan, da, 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 then they made the Kelim, da, 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 and it could have been far less information than what we actually have in these two parashas. But besides that, it really doesn't explain why there has to be so much detail in the story. See, if the point is just to illustrate the order of events, then Aleph, l'shem kach ho yodai b'chelek ha-sipra sh'b'toreh ha-mlamdeinu sh'osu t'chiles ha-mishkan, v'rachar kach hizchilu b'asiyas ha-kelim, then really, if all we need to know is that the Mishkan was made first and then the Kelim, then the Torah could have just told us the details of the Mishkan, and then But the second part, in other words, tell us all about the Mishkan and then say, and then they made the Kelim and the Big Day Kahuna. I don't need all the details now. Now I get it. I know that every detail of the Mishkan was made first. That was important information. And now all I need to know is that the Kelim and the Big Day Kahuna were made afterwards. You don't have to now tell me again what all of the Kelim were and what materials they were made from, what size they were, and their design, and what the Big Day Kahuna. You don't have to repeat that. I've got it. I understand. If the purpose is, if the whole repetition is just to tell me the order of the Mishkan, I've got the order. Thank you very much. Beis ve'iker. If really the Torah's entire purpose over here was to tell me the order in which the construction happened, first the Mishkan building and then the Kelim furniture that went inside, then the truth is I don't need any of the details. Even when describing the Mishkan, I don't need to know how big it was. I've learned all of those things before. Now besides that, now we're going to have two further questions because, okay, they get to the point, they've built the whole Mishkan, and now they bring it to Moshe, because remember, Moshe is the one who had to actually put it up. They designed it and they made all the components, but Moshe was the only person who could successfully structure the Mishkan. So now what happens? Now at this point, that you've just repeated the whole story, and you've told me all of the details, which ostensibly so that I will know that the Mishkan was built first and then the Kelim afterwards. Now they're presenting the finished products to Moshe, and what does it say? The whole thing again. The whole detail again. Why do I need the details here? And then, only after you've repeated yourself again, then the Torah finally says the one line that apparently could have saved us all of the trouble, that the Jews did exactly what Moshe had instructed them on Hashem's directive to do. So it's a really glaring question. Why would the Torah keep repeating itself again and again and again? Rashi doesn't say a word about it. That implies that the answer is really straightforward. Either you could read it in the Psukim itself, or you know it from something Rashi taught us previously. We'll go with that. There's a really simple explanation. Everybody will agree that building the Mishkan was going to achieve the most precious thing for the Jewish people, bringing the Shechina into our space. And that's incredibly beautiful for us. Especially when you consider what Rashi points out. Why is it called Mishkan HaEdus? Edus means testimony. So it's testimony to what, says Rashi. It was evidence to the Jewish people every single day that they'd get up and they'd look at that Mishkan. That would be evidence that Hashem had forgiven them for the worst mess up they'd ever done as a nation, the Egel HaZahav. Which only highlights how precious the Mishkan was for them and how broad an issue the Mishkan addressed. We know that the Chet HaEgel was the worst, most general, in other words, most encompassing sin that the Jewish people ever did, that caused the most incredible breach between us and Hashem, this distancing of godliness from us. Until God forbid there was even a threat that the Jewish people might end Chas V'Shalom at that point. In fact, even when Hashem said he forgives the Egel Azav, he says, but he'll never forget it. Every single Aveira for the rest of history will have the flavor of the Egel Azav in it. Which only drives home the message for us that the Mishkan, which is the antidote to the Egel Azov, is incredibly central, it's an incredibly encompassing concept, and it's very precious to the Yidden. And that's exactly why the Torah repeats itself. You'll know this from your own experience. If you really care about something, if you're very excited about something, you keep talking about it. You don't stop. And we're designed that way to reflect how the Eibishter does things too. So why does the Torah repeat again and again and again the details of the Mishkan? Because this is such a beautiful thing. This is the Mishkan that brings Elokus, brings the Shechina into our world. This is the Mishkan that gets rid of the effects of the Egel Azav. This is beautiful. Tell me about it again. And that's obvious. Rashi didn't even have to tell it to us. And besides which, Rashi has already taught us this principle before, because V'tam ze lo itzach Rashi leforish kan. Rashi doesn't have to tell us here that when you are enthusiastic about something and you care about something, you repeat it. Because he already explained that principle to us in Chayei Sarah with a very famous repetition of Eliezer's story of how he got there and how he found Rivka, and he tells the story once and then he tells the story again, verbatim. So the Acha Shemetuarim Bakosav Hamura is Eliezer v'Davron b'Keshel Arichos L'Avias Rivka. After the Torah tells us all the details of how Eliezer and all the miracles that happened and finding her at the well and the water came up and all these things, and she gave water to his camels. So the Torah told us all of it with all of the detail. The Torah tells us not just that Eliezer told all of that information to her family, but it tells us the whole story again in Eliezer's voice. And Rashi, in explaining why this phenomenon happens of the Torah repeating itself again, is because Rav Acha taught us that the words, the storytelling, the narrative of the servants of the Avos is even more precious than the instructive Torah that was given to the Jewish people. As Rashi says over there, because the words of Eliezer are repeated verbatim twice, whereas some of our most important mitzvahs are only told to us in a hint. You don't know what tefillin are from the Torah. You don't know where a mezuzah is supposed to stand from the Torah. You don't know how to shecht from the Torah. The Torah only alluded to those things. And yet the story of Rivka, that's in tremendous detail.
And
therefore Rashi has already taught us previously that if something is beautiful and precious in Hashem's eyes, the Torah will repeat it even word for word, and therefore he doesn't have to explain it over here. Because if you think that the story of Yitzchak and Rivka Shidduch, and specifically the details of how Eliezer identified her as the right girl, if you think that's important, well, the Mishkan is certainly important. Certainly deserving of repetition. Sounds like a beautiful answer, except for one thing. Chadayin Tzorich Lahavin, we just need to understand. Mipirush Rashi Zeh Muchach Licha Eira Lahefech. One second. Look at what Rashi said. It actually seems to go against our explanation. Because Shari Pirush Yosef Sichasin Shel Av De'ovois Miteirosim Shel Bonim Ukipshutai Shebeteirosim Shel Bonim Shel Achreim Atan Teira Einon Amotzim Chavivus Kozois. Ashetobi Lideinin Shel Kfula Beteira Kamoi Besichasin Shel Av De'ovois. Actually, the way that Rashi told it to us, it sounds like the Torason, the instructions that we were given, even though we were given those instructions directly from Hashem after Matan Torah, it's exactly those instructions that appear not to be as chaviv, as precious as the story of Eliezer Evd Avram. So, v'im ken yef shaloyim b'yazelin akfeles b'asis ha-mishkin shimi Torason shabonim, surely then, if the instruction to make a Mishkan, which is part of the Torah son Shel Bonim, which is not as beautiful and precious as Sichas Avdei Avos, so actually Rashi's explanation seems to go against us. We need a reason why the Mishkan is repeated. We suggest that the reason is because it's so precious. We prove it from Rashi's statement. Rashi's statement seems to say that Torah instructions can never be that precious. So then what's going on over here? And why would the Torah repeat itself? Unless we're putting the emphasis on the wrong part of what Rashi said about Eliezer's speech. When Rashi says that the narrative of the servant of the Avos, or the servants of the Avos, is more beautiful and precious than the instructive Torah to the children, Rashi's intention was never to even suggest that the servants of our avos are in any way greater than we are. That's not the message. If anything, Rashi wanted to illustrate that sometimes sicha, narrative, telling a story, is sometimes more valuable than giving a Torah instruction. So don't read this wrong. Don't think Eliezer had a one-up on us. It's not that. It's that the concept of sicha, when you talk the details of a story because it's important and beautiful to you, that takes priority over telling the instructions of how to fulfill Torah. So let's understand it. Hachiluk b'neim kipshuto yihu, simple distinction between Torah and sicha. Torah pirusha hoi ra'ois sivuim v'dinim shetziva HaKadosh Baruch Hu ma lasos v'yzefen lasos. Torah is always instructions. What you need to do and how you need to do it. Sicha pirusha dibur shebegoloi ubi pshut einu tzivu v'hayra. Sicha is conversation. The idea of sicha is I'm sharing something with you. It could be something I heard, something I experienced, something I'm feeling, something I'm thinking. It's conversational. It has nothing to do with instruction. I'm not looking to achieve a particular goal. I'm going to tell you this and then you're going to do X. And therefore, ela sipra meta'er matzav ma'ura pa'ula v'chayotze boze. Torah gives an instruction, sicha gives a description. It might describe an event, a person, an action, but it's descriptive. Kvi shahoya eitzel Eliezer v'davrom apipshut, eish sipra al avrom yitzchot v'sashed koro, advar kvitza derech, keitza HaKadosh Baruch Hu zimun lo yisrifka v'chulei. That's what Eliezer did. He told a story. He told a story about Avram Avinu, he told a story about Yitzchak, he told a story about how he got there and that it was miraculous. He told a story how Rivka checked all the boxes of what he wanted for somebody who was the shidduch for Yitzchak. It's a story that he tells. So therefore Rashi's whole point over here based on Rav Acha's teaching is that sometimes telling a story has sometimes got more beauty and value than actually giving a practical instruction of how to behave and live as a Jewish person. So even if the story is sometimes being told by an Eved and the Torah is being directed at a Yid, sometimes the story has greater value. That we can apply to our parashas Vayakhel Pekudei Shalachrei parashas Truma Utetzaveh, that follow after we've already had Truma and Tetzaveh, the instructive parashas. So our parashas Shaloi Bolim Sort Sivuim Vayrois Ketzad Malasos, our parashas are not to tell us what to do and how to do it, because we already have that from Truma and Tetzaveh. If we did not have Vayakhel Pekudei, it's not like we wouldn't know what to do. Ela, so why is the Torah repeating itself? Ela Torah mesaperes ben biprotus varucho keitzad moser Moshe Rabbeinu ibn Eslas kol tzivay Hashem binyam lechas ha-mishkan veich shekima se befoya v'chulei hainu shezenin shel sicha. Vayakel and Pekudei is telling the story of what happened. Truma tetzaven, even Kisis are telling us what needs to happen. This is the legislation. Vayakel Pekudei tells us what happened. There was a story. Moshe conveyed the message in all of its details, and the Jews fulfilled the instructions in all of their details. Now we get it. It's sicha, it's storytelling, and it's on a subject which is chaviva, which is very precious both to the Jews and to Hashem. And we already know that when you have storytelling that is about something which is precious and important and central, it gets repeated, so we understand why the Torah repeats itself. Now, one of the questions we often ask about Rashi is, why do you tell me who your source is? It's not relevant to understanding the Pshat, unless, of course, the name is going to add value to our understanding. So now, based on our understanding here, we can retro-understand Rashi's commentary in Parashas Chayesara and why he had to tell us that it was Rav Acha specifically who taught this particular teaching about the beauty of Sichas Avdei Ovis. We always say that if Rashi names the person he learns the source from, it's to add a dimension of understanding. We wanted to make really sure that we understood where the emphasis needs to be in this teaching. We are not emphasizing the greatness of Avram Avinu's servant over our greatness. Instead, we're emphasizing the greatness of Sicha storytelling that sometimes has an advantage over Torah instruction giving. And knowing that's Rabbi Acha, that's going to help us. And that will obviously also help us to understand how sometimes it could be that a conversation is even more meaningful and precious than an instruction in Torah. So how does Rav Acha help us understand? There's a brisa brought in Masechta Yuma that says, okay, so it says, you should speak of them. Now, we know what them is. We know that it means Torah, right? That's what it's referring to. Let's see what the brisa says. So it means v'dibarto bom is to emphasize words of Torah over and giving them an advantage to words of davening. And then another explanation that's brought is v'dibarto bom yesh l'chol rishus l'daber v'lo b'dvorim acherim. You are permitted to speak about these things and not about other things. Now we'll need to understand exactly what we're talking about over here, because you could easily misunderstand and think we're saying, oh, you have license to speak about things that are not necessarily important. Let's see. Rabbi Acha Oimer, v'dibarta bom, asei oison keva, v'alta asem arai. Rabbi Acha comes along and he says that v'dibarta bom means that words of Torah should be your mainstay. That should be primarily what you talk about. And don't make it like haphazard and casual, your Torah learning. Now, v'lichayra. The fact that Rabbi Acha only speaks in the context of Torah, v'dibar tobam, that should be the main thing that you talk about. It shouldn't be casual. V'ein maskar advar shlilosom shel dvarim acherim, k'divar abar plukta shelo ilil shom v'dibar tobam lo b'dvarim acherim. And he doesn't say, as whoever the anonymous other opinion is, he doesn't say, and don't speak other things. He completely ignores that. Okay, so the first opinion says, speak words of Torah and don't speak other things. Rabbi Acha comes along and he just says, speak words of Torah, and that should be the main thing that you focus on, and don't let it be too casual. Mashma, shel Rabbi Acha b'dvarim acherim ein yachol lashlil. That implies that Rabbi Acha does not agree that you're not allowed to speak about other things. He thinks there's room to speak about other things. So then you have to ask yourselves, So what does that mean? Does that mean that Rabbi Acha believes that there's room to speak idle chatter? Dvarim acherim, other things? Could that even be a suggestion? No. That's the whole point of Rabbi Acha. Rabbi Acha says the two ways that you could talk, Torah or other meaningful conversation. Rabir Bozehu, Rabbi Acha Madgish, Rabbi Acha wants to highlight, Shabinagela Divra Torah Yeshne Chiev, Tmidi, Umuchlot, Shetzorich Lius Vidibartabon. When it comes to Torah learning, there's an obligation that you have consistently, that that's what you should talk about. Words of Torah. Vishyadvarim Keva Veloi Arai. And those words of Torah should be your mainstay focus, not casual. But he says, it's not that you have to exclude every other kind of conversation, because there are other kinds of conversation, sicha, that are good to have on occasion. Rabbi Acha wants us to know, these dvarim acherim are not dvarim betelim, it's not nonsensical talk, even though it's not Torah talk, so it's something else. What is it? So Rabbi Acha says one way that you could talk is you could talk words of Torah, specifically, halacha, gemara, hashkafa, whatever it is. And then there are other kinds of talk which are just to encourage people, sicha, the kind of things that people enjoy. That's chaviv. It's the kind of thing that people enjoy. It inspires them, even if it's not absolute Torah. So therefore, as far as Rabbi Acha is concerned, this is an acceptable kind of conversation. In fact, it might even be a beautiful kind of conversation. In fact, sometimes it could even be more precious and more beautiful than actual instructive Torah, something that's going to change your life. Like, let's talk about the Mishkan. Let's go through it again. Let's find out again how much gold was there. What was it used for? What was the design of the menorah? Where was the shulchan placed? How did they strap up the Kohen Gadol? It's beautiful. Is it going to teach me what I need to do in my life now? No. But it's sicha yofa. And it's shemin komokim, dafkim in a gela Torah, kiyam kai matziva, say oison keva, val tasem arai. Yet, when it comes to Torah, there he has to say, that's supposed to be the main thing. That's supposed to be 99% of where your focus is. Shari muva me ilov gam le ben chomish. Shechai vodim nizkar tamid, ume meile lashanim le dabar vil moida say rois diva Torah, but dvar masha tzoich lasso, is masha osa lasso, is vichule, because it's absolutely clear to anybody, including a 5-year-old child who's new to Chumash and he's Rashi's student, he knows that you have to keep learning Torah all the time, so that you're always conscious of how you're supposed to behave and what you're supposed to believe and what you should never do. So that's clear. But Rabbi Acha allowed the possibility of another way of talking that's actually good, that's actually healthy. It's called Sicha. That helps us to understand, in Rashi's commentary, that our emphasis was not to turn Eliezer into some kind of a hero who has greater value than we do, but rather to describe that his way of talking sometimes has greater value than the talking of, this is what you need to do, this is what you may not do. So now we can look at it at a deeper level, and from that learn a practical take-home lesson for ourselves. In Vayakel Pekudei, the two parishes that rehash all of the details of how to build a Mishkan, there are basically two primary things that are expressed. One is Nedivus Alev Shel Bnei Yisrael. The incredible generosity of the Jewish people is highlighted multiple times. They came forward with such enthusiasm and speed and with such generosity until eventually must be the only fundraiser in Jewish history where they had to say stop. And there's extra. So one theme that emerges out of the story that makes the Sicha Chaviva, that makes it such a beautiful story, it's the story of Jewish enthusiasm to participate. It's a story of incredible generosity to be part of Hashem's project, on the one hand. Another theme that emerges is Kim Tzivei Hashem al-Yidei Chachmei Lev, Shosis Melech Zamishkan, Becheilov, Kechol Asher Tzivo Hashem Uvozeh Gufa, Kasher Tzivo Hashem Es Moshe. The other side of the coin is the absolute compliance, that they listened, they followed exactly as they were told, to the point that they were able to make the Mishkan exactly as Hashem wanted and exactly as Moshe had told them that Hashem wanted. Now, anybody who's ever been involved in a building project will know that that does not happen. You never get exactly what you want. There's always some niggling element here, or some color that didn't match exactly perfectly, or something goes wrong. So that shows you the incredible compliance, the absolute Kabbalah soul. So these are the two factors of the human interaction of the Jewish people contributing to the Mishkan: enthusiasm and generosity, heart, compliance, Kabbalah Sol. Now it's interesting because you actually see a beautiful fusion of these two realities. Because Gamba Abbas Nitvas Hamishkan Oikim Tziva Hashem Bedugmas Eved, Vikhuli Truma Meis Kalisha Shei Dveni Liba Goymer, Kumi Trem Truma Goymer. On the one hand, even in all of their gushing enthusiasm, they actually were doing it out of compliance because Hashem said donate. So it wasn't just because they volunteered like any normal energetic circumstance. You know, we say, oh, we want to be part of it. No, they were following an instruction. So they had a compliance element at the same time that they were so enthusiastic and generous. And on the other hand, when you see the artisans putting together the Mishkan and they have to be absolutely compliant to every little detail, it says that they were motivated and led by their hearts. So you see this beautiful fusion of two realities which usually don't go hand in hand. Usually when you're being compliant, you're not necessarily feeling energetic and generous. And usually when it's your own magnanimity, you're not necessarily feeling compliant. And here you saw a fusion of the two. They were living in two worlds simultaneously. A world of great, intense energy and a world of absolute acceptance. Which implies that both of the elements happened in the story. There's the sicha element and there's the eved element. Meaning, we identified in Rashi's commentary that we don't want to highlight the eved of Avraham as being better than us, but it still was part of the conversation. Yafa sichasen shel avdei avos. So sicha is beautiful, but being an eved is also beautiful, and they had both. Sicha kshura lelev shara. Sicha inyan atvila k'mayim razal, utvila ari avoida shebelev. Sicha is, as the pasuk says, eshboich sicha, that I will pour out my conversation with Hashem. Arim sichi ve'ahima, like we say on Rosh Hashanah. So sicha is, it's talking from your heart. It's not just an ordinary conversation. It's talking with that enthusiasm and that hartzikait that is expressed in generosity and zrizus. And specifically is associated with prayer. They had that. Whereas being an eved is to comply, to do what you're told, which mainly relates to doing mitzvahs, because a mitzvah you have to do as you're told, and it's not a matter of whether you feel it or you don't. You just got to do what you're told. Davening should be with feeling. So sicha is davening, and mitzvahs is eved. And so you see in the production of the Mishkan, you actually see both channels. On the one hand, they had that enthusiastic investment of Sicha. Their heart was in it, really. And on the other hand, you have their sincere compliance as an Eved, as a Jew should do mitzvahs. And both were components of building the Mishkan, which basically teaches us how we're supposed to serve Hashem. We're supposed to be this way. That when you're doing a mitzvah out of Kabbalah Sol, because this is what Hashem said, you still have to have heart and you still have to have enthusiasm and you still have to be driven. And equally, when we are enthusiastic about Torah and mitzvahs, it has to be really clear that our enthusiasm derives from Kabbalah Sol. I'm not just enthusiastic because it's what I love. I'm enthusiastic because it's what Hashem wants. And that's the real balance of how a person is supposed to serve Hashem with incredible chayos and incredible kabbalah soul all rolled into one.